Appreciate it.
I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bob for asking me to come and participate here at the State Line. It's an honor, and I tell you, I sit there and I've listened to the speakers since Thursday, and it amazes me. And I really enjoyed the talks that they gave, and I don't even have to talk about 6 and 7. Ralph did it, so I think that's cool. I guess I'll go right into the fifth step without the heavy breathing, so I have a problem with that. And but I always get mystified when I stand or sit at a meeting and I listen to the people participate, and with the intelligence and the composure and the things that they say about the Big Book and about Alcoholics Anonymous and the things that they're doing and how they understand things. And I'm serious about that. It's not a wisecrack. I am amazed at what they have got out of this program. And then I have to start thinking, where in the hell did I go wrong? Because I don't understand any of that. And when someone told me when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous to keep it simple, I really have. So I'm going to lower the bar just a little bit. So you might as well get ready and probably have a longer lunch than you anticipated. Because Bob asked me to speak on step 6 and 7, which has to do with defects of character and shortcomings. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have any. I haven't had any since I've been here. So I'm going to have a hard time talking about something I really don't know anything about. So what I'm going to have to do is just point people out in the audience. And I'm going to have to talk about yours as Frank sees it. And I'm going to start with the old guy sitting right here at this table. I really shouldn't do it because he has the mic last, but I've never cared about anything anyway, so I don't care about that. All the people that think that he is such a nice man that saves people's lives and has this tremendous intellect and knowledge of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to enlighten you on a couple of things. He has picked on me. Don't turn on me. I will come from behind the podium. I am not a spiritual giant like the rest of these people here. I am an angry, hateful man. So all this love and stuff and hugging you do with the others, don't try it. But I got sober, and I didn't know who Clancy was. I had never heard of him, because the first 13 months that I was sober, I did not attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't have a desire to take a drink. And that's what I heard at my first meeting. If you want a drink, come to AA. And I have not had a desire to take a drink of alcohol in over 30 years. And what happened over that 13 months, some folks here know my story, is I got progressively more angry and crazy and depressed and desperate, and I finally flipped out after I choked a guy out in a real estate office for asking me how I was doing. I felt it was a personal question. And the folks that were in that office that day happened to be a member of my home group, and they took me and back to the garage I was living in and sat with me for about a week, sent my family to his house. And at the end of that week, they took me down to this man named Clancy. I had not heard of him. I thought he looked like a little elf. And he sat in the office and he explained to me something that day, which has saved my life to this day. He said, I didn't have a problem drinking. I had a problem living, and I needed to find a living answer to my living problem, and I would find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was living in a garage not attached to a house. We were sleeping on the floor of that garage, my wife and my two daughters, aged 3 and 8. We were eating out of a styrofoam chest, and we had a hose run from the neighbor's house to there because there was no water. It was just the garage. And a mission truck pulls up from the midnight mission, and they unload 3 beds. I have 2 daughters, a wife, and me. 4 people. They unloaded 3 beds, army cots, and 3 small mattresses, army blankets, and a couple of sheets for each bed. That upset me. So I go down to a payphone and I call him, and I said, "You only sent 3 beds and 4 of us are living here." And he said, "You lost the furniture, you son of a bitch. Sleep on the floor." So all of you should think he is so nice. He's not. That was my first week as him as my sponsor. Shortly after that, I'm down at the mission complaining about something. We had no washer or dryer, and he took a roll of quarters and wrote a little note to my wife and wrapped that in the note, the quarters, and gave it to me. And he said, "Give this to your wife." And I went home and I gave it to her. And the note said, "Since your husband's too cheap to buy you a washer or dryer, here's money so you can get your clothes washed." I didn't have a job, no money, no nothing. He's just picking on me again. You folks that admire and love him, you are lucky he is still walking. I could have taken his life. But the man has saved my life. We're playing volleyball at the yard one day. Just this is the last thing. This is how cruel he is. I am a Vietnam veteran. I was wounded twice in Vietnam. I spent 25 months over there. And we're playing volleyball, and I hit a ball into the net. And he yells at me in front of about 130 people. "It's okay to win here. This isn't Vietnam." If you think he works a spiritual program, you're wrong. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was homeless. I had lived out on the streets for almost a year. And the first time I ever got called on to participate, I stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous at a participation meeting in our group on a Tuesday night, and I made this statement quite sincerely. When I was out there drinking, I didn't hurt anybody but myself. And I was serious. Because I didn't think I hurt anybody. I was never home to yell at the kids. I wasn't around. And in my mind, I was so deluded, so crazy, and so soaked with alcohol, self-obsession, self-pity, and self-centeredness, I could see nothing but me. I didn't think I had any defects of character or any shortcomings. And I'm serious. I really didn't think I did. Looking back over my life, I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I don't know why I am an immature, self-centered, egotistical alcoholic. My parents were outstanding. I had great mom and dad. Dad worked on the railroad. My mom took care of me and my 2 brothers. I did everything that kids loved doing growing up. I played Little League baseball, Pony League football, basketball, run track, had a scholarship to go to college and play basketball. I was popular. I had girlfriends. There is no reason for me to have acted in high school the way I acted. I felt entitled all my life. Nobody taught me to be entitled. My dad worked hard. He got up every morning, packed a lunchbox, and went to drive trains. And my mom worked her butt off keeping that house clean and decent and raising us three boys. I don't know where my sense of entitlement come from. I don't know why I started stealing and giving stuff to people so they'd like me. I didn't in my mind register that as being anything wrong. I really didn't. I'm serious. I was raised Catholic. I know about the Ten Commandments. I know about the church. I know about right from wrong. I did not, in my mind, I am so self-absorbed and so entitled, I didn't think stealing was a bad thing. And I used to do it all the time. I didn't think that lying was a big deal. And I didn't have to lie about nothing. And I lied about everything. I hadn't even drank yet. I was so consumed with fear and what people thought about me and their perception of me and how I felt about myself, I became a fighter at a very early age. And I started knocking people around in elementary school in the first and second grade. I would get in fist fights. My parents never taught. My dad never raised his voice to my mom in my presence ever. I don't know where the anger came from. I don't know where my attitude that I had came from of wanting to be something, and I don't know what that something is. And I had no defects of character when I got here. All I want is more. Give me, lend me, can I have, let me borrow, do for me, praise me. Clancy said it best, and when I heard it, it rang a bell. If you treat me normal, like a normal person that you treat other people, I feel rejected. If you treat me special and like I'm really cool and you really like me a lot and you praise me and talk about me and slap me on the back, I feel normal. I don't know where that came from. I wasn't raised that way. My mother and father weren't that way. They're not alcoholics. When I drank, it got worse. My actions, my attitude, my mouth, my language, everything progressed to a worse degree than it is before I ever started drinking. And that's not good. And then I joined the Marine Corps. And then they gave me guns and live ammunition. And they sent me to a place where you can use them. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people, and I thought I had to do that to show the people around me how tough I was, how non-feeling I was. And I don't know where this men ain't supposed to feel nothing come from. My dad never displayed that to me. My dad was a good and decent man, a very hard-working man. And I don't know where those things come from. But I felt that I had to show everybody how tough and how bad I was because of my self-centeredness and my soul sickness, which all has to do with a broken character. I don't know where my character got broke. I have no clue. And so I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. And I thought everything that I did is okay. And after that, 11 years in the Marine Corps, I drank myself out of there. I didn't think they were acting up to my standards. So when my enlistment was up, I got out of the Marine Corps and became a police officer. If you think that's funny, I will jack you up. You need to have respect for authority. And you put a gun and a badge on me, with my attitude and my self-centeredness and my ego and all of my defects of character, which I didn't have and nobody could ever convince me I did, that is a bad situation. And I did a lot of bad things when I was a police officer. You will do exactly as I tell you to do because I was God. I can take your life. A police officer can take your life. I can put you in jail. I can take your freedom. And I did that. I was so high and mighty in my mind that if I thought you were lying to me or you weren't respecting the authority that I represented and my partners represented, I would pencil whip you in a report and put you in jail. I'm not proud of that. That's where I go because I don't have any defects of character or shortcomings. I got married. I still have to be validated. If my wife can't validate me, I will find another woman that will. Because you see, I wasn't enough. Being a combat veteran, being a Marine Staff NCO, being a police officer is not enough for me. I don't know about you. I don't know what part of your life isn't enough for you. I don't know how much money's not enough. I don't know how big of a car is not enough. I don't know how big of a home you have and it ain't enough. I don't know how beautiful your wife has to be, the clothes you wear, the jewelry you wear. I don't know if what is not enough for you. If you're like me, that wasn't the reason. I just really worked hard and deserved better. You see, my mind can convince me that everything I'm doing is okay, or I wouldn't be doing it. It has nothing to do with greed. It has nothing to do with any of the defects of character, from sloth to jealousy or anything else. It has to do with feeding me and my soul to make me feel whole. It has to do with me being the human being I think I should be. I think it's about me being the human being that I want you to see and have respect for and admire. And so I always need more. Gimme, gimme, gimme. And I verbally abuse that wife, and if I get in an argument with you, I can fillet you that quick. But you see, I wouldn't have done that had she not caused me to do it. It is her fault, not my fault. And when I got back from Vietnam, she was doing that and yelling at me, and I told her to shut up or I'll kill her, and she didn't believe me. And a man who is like me, that's self-centered, when I say something, I mean it, and I will do it. And I went and got a gun, and I was going to shoot that woman. Now, I'm so self-absorbed and self-obsessed and driven by me. My children are there and my daughter standing between my legs telling me, don't shoot her, mommy. And I am more important of proving my point than risking that little girl's life that is crying and telling me, don't shoot her, mommy. And I have no defects of character. I wouldn't be doing it if she had shut up. I don't know about you. I don't know where your ego takes you. I don't know where your self-centeredness takes you. But if it's like me, everything I do is okay or I wouldn't have done it. You see, everything I do, good or bad, my head tells me it's okay or I would not have done it. And I had no defects of character when I got here. I ended up shooting myself in the hand. That's not funny. It hurt. I was a sniper in Vietnam, so I still had a good record. I didn't miss when I fired. What happened was, is I became a perfectionist, and I have since learned, when I told my sponsor I was a perfectionist, he said, well, just tell me, Slim, what are you perfect at? He's just so cute. There's shit that he can come up with. I just love it. And there's nothing I'm perfect at, but my mind tells me I'm perfect at everything, and everything I do is okay, or I wouldn't do it. And my kids would do their homework, and I would look at their homework, and if it had a misspelled word or an erase, anything erased on it, I would tear it up and tell them, do it again. Do it right. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. It's not worth doing right. It's worth doing my way. I didn't have any defects of character. That's the kind of father I was. I thought I was raising them right. I was teaching them discipline. Everything I did, I had a reason for the reason I did it, or I wouldn't have done it. And I verbally harangued that family to death. And ego and jealousy and sloth and ambition and all the things is not enough. Because I put such demands on myself and my family and the people around me that there is no way in hell they could possibly live up to the demands that I put on them. And I was making them ready for adulthood. That's the kind of father I was. That's the kind of husband I was. I had no defects of character or shortcomings. When I told you I would be someplace, I may not show up. Or I would show up when I thought it was convenient for me. I didn't care about you. The only thing I ever cared about was myself. Now, I'm convinced in my mind at that time that I care about you. I'm just teaching you lessons. That's what I think about. You see, I can totally delude myself into believing that everything I'm doing is okay and that everything I'm doing is to benefit you. What it's doing is feeding my self-absorption is what it's doing, and I didn't know that. Alcohol didn't mask that. Alcohol allowed me to go into grander places in my mind and increase the intensity of what was going on around me. That's what it did. I made a lot of money in real estate after I left the police department because my female partner shot me. I guess any time I get shot, it just thrills you people, doesn't it? I guess you don't have any defects of character either, huh? You don't take pleasure in other people's suffering, do you? She shot me in the head because I got my wife pregnant. Now, what the hell is up with that? I guess her and I were doing a fifth step about every night. I don't know. You'll get it. You're a little slow, but you'll catch it. Ralph said it at the end of his talk, for Christ's sakes. But she shot me and I got out of the police department. Now I got a real estate license. I have ambition because I want to support that family and I want to give them the things that I think they should have that are nice. Number one, if I do that, it helps assuage my guilt for the things I'm doing and the things I'm saying and how I'm treating them and the fact I'm never around. So I'm trying to buy them. And I made a ton of money in real estate. I will rip you off. And if you're a liar and a cheat and you're in real estate in the late 70s, you will make a ton of money. And I did. And I owned a lot of property and a strip mall and we had everything that money can buy. And all I did is get worse. And I was never home because I have to make money. You see, greed is not ambition. Ambition is working hard and having a goal and working to that goal and having the maturity to level out the rest of your life around the ambition. Greed is what I had, and I call it ambition because I wanted more. There's never enough money for anything. I don't know about you. I could never have enough. The house is too small. We had a house built on a quarter acre, put a swimming pool in and a three-hole putting green, and it wasn't good enough. I paid cash for two new Cadillacs, and it wasn't good enough. Nothing is ever good enough, and therefore I have to go out and I have to work, except I'm working with a female partner in the real estate office. We were doing our inventories. I masked that as ambition. It was greed and lust, no integrity, no loyalty, no faithfulness. But it was a lot of fun. And I enjoyed it. And I had a great time. And I had to be validated. I had to feel like all the things I was doing for that family, I was successful. And that's what made me feel successful. I had no defects of character or shortcomings. I was convinced I was doing okay. When I ended up homeless on the streets and my wife and family had left, you couldn't convince me I had a problem. I had no humility, which is part of step 7. It was all about me. Everything was about me. And if something bad happened, I could blame other people or situations or things, or I've never had a break, and then I'd be consumed with self-pity, feeling sorry for myself because it didn't go the way I thought it should. I'd say I was going to do something, I would never do it. I would commit my sins of omission or commission. I either failed to do the things I should have or I did things I shouldn't. And I lied and I cheated and I put a facade out there, and my defects of character and shortcomings were nothing I could see, but probably everybody around me could. And when I ended up, my parents found out I was dying on the streets in Simi Valley in California. They had me committed and strapped down in a hospital. And I was upset about that because I don't know why they did that. I'm a veteran, for Christ's sakes. I hadn't done anything wrong in my mind. I had worked hard. I'd made money. I'd supported that family. They didn't appreciate it. And they had me strapped down. I hadn't spoke to my parents in almost 4 years. Well, not my fault. I didn't like what they said when I called, so I quit calling. How could they talk to me that way? My ego is bigger than this whole resort. And that's how I felt. That was an honest feeling. I wasn't kidding myself. That is how I felt. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I said, I really didn't believe I had any defects of character or shortcomings. I had some bad breaks. I had people that misunderstood me. And I had to start doing these 12 steps. I didn't really think they pertained to me. I was raised Catholic. I've been to confession. No, he never touched me. I did drink all the wine for communion and steal a chalice once, but what the hell? They got more than one. And I thought it'd be cool to have. I seen the Knights of the Round Table, so I stole it. I thought I worked there, and they didn't pay me. I started looking at the things I had done over my life when I did that inventory. And I couldn't convince myself. You see, I can read anything in the big book or in the 12 and 12. And like I said, the people that spoke so eloquently about the things they talked about, I couldn't get that. When I read it, I can't get it. What I had to do is start listening to the old-timers in my home group. What I had to start doing is being brought into a humble state, not beat down. I had to be brought in and back down to size, and my sponsor happens to be very good at that. The illustrations I gave you in the beginning of my talk are the ways he did that. And the way I could quit taking myself so seriously and take a really good look at me. Because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I watched the old timers. And they had big cars. And they had nice homes. And they looked really nice when they were at the meetings. And they had watches. They had rings. That's what I wanted. Because when I got here, I'd been homeless. I didn't have anything. And I was still putting demands on the people around me because I still had my chinchy attitude, and I was filled with anger, and I was filled with hate and despair and desperation, and they had to get on me. my sponsor told me to start doing some things to get out of myself and to bring me back into a humble state. He told me to go around and shake hands with everybody. Well, I don't want to shake hands with you. I don't even know who in the hell you are. And I had ideas about every race and creed of people that was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used those racial terms until my sponsor snapped me up physically by the shirt and told me to quit using that language. And then he told me something, and this won't affect you at all, but it affected me. He told me to go stand outside the men's restroom and shake hands with everybody that comes out until I found Don Newcomb. Not the pitcher, the convict. Now, my ego is such, and I am such a wonderful, sanitary, clean, holy individual. I couldn't believe he wanted me to shake hands. I don't know if they washed their hands or not. I don't know what they've been doing with them. I didn't know the reason he told me that. I do today. It's to get me in line. And I'm nothing but one of the grains of sand on the beach of sobriety. That's all I am. I am not above or below anybody. I can put myself in either of those positions with my defects of character and shortcomings if I allow them to bloom and blossom. But if he makes me a grain of sand on the beach of sobriety, I am okay. And I stood out there and shook everybody's hand. I don't know why I don't do things like that to humiliate myself. I used to call and tell him my daughter's, when we finally moved into a real house, my daughter's bedrooms. I don't know why women have to use three or four towels to dry their hair. I don't know why they have to have the curling iron hung on the drawer, the bra and the panties and the bedclothes in the middle of the floor and posters and shit on the ceiling. I don't know why they got to have that. And it used to make me crazy because I wanted the house perfect. And I'd call and whine and complain to my sponsor, and he said, "Whose room is it?" I said, "It's my daughter's." And he said, "When you walk by, shut the door. You don't have to look at it. It's not your room, it's their room. Why don't you give them a haven where they're safe? Away from you, you maniac." And he hung up on me. I had to learn that the world did not operate the way I thought it should, and it never will. People don't have to do it my way. I had to find that out in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to find out that I was one among many. My standards, you do not have to live up to. I don't like people's standards in AA. I don't like... And now, if this hits you, don't come up and tell me at the end because I don't care. But I'm just going to lay some things out that bother me. And you probably do them because most people in AA do them now. But it aggravates the hell out of me when I see it. Because we didn't have cell phones when I got here. But when I speak or I'm standing at the podium or I'm sitting in a meeting and I see a cell phone light up, it absolutely drives me insane. That is total disrespect for AA. Put the damn phone away. You're not a transplant surgeon. You're not on call. You're in an AA meeting. And I must voice my opinion about that to them. And I know I shouldn't. I hate people that sit and look at pictures and shit or read letters during the meeting. You have contempt for what's saving your life? Are you kidding me? Now, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to eyeball all the women and shit and wave and wink. And I didn't care what the speaker was saying or doing. That was me. I had a reason. I was lonely. You don't have a reason. Don't do that in the meeting. These are my defects of characters. Those things still aggravate me. People that sit around in a meeting with a hat on. Didn't your parents tell you when you enter a building, take your hat off? For God's sakes, who are you hiding from? Or your sunglasses and shit on? Are you kidding? These things still aggravate me. I'm just telling, these are my defects of character. I'm not a wonderful human being because I got over 30 years sober. I am a human being. And I have these feelings. What I do is I try not to let them, my defects of character, I try not to inflict them on you. But these things I inflict on you. Have respect for AA. Sit and pay attention at the meeting. Even if there's a dummy like me standing up here talking, simulate interest. Barrett, stop clapping. I will come over and choke your little ass out. I don't even know why short people come to AA. There's just really no reason. You should be in a department store with Santa. In a pointy hat and shit and pointy shoes. There's another defect of character. I'm judgmental. When my daughters were growing up, they were 3 and 8, and my other two kids didn't live with me when I got sober. And I tell a story about being in a grocery store and a woman having more than 10 items in the 10-item line. And it irritated me. And then she broke a checkbook out and the sign said cash. And I threw her groceries all over the grocery store. And 4 sheriffs came to talk to me. I was 10 months sober. My 3-year-old daughter was with me. I am so self-obsessed, it's how I feel. And how I feel if I think you've wronged me and you make me look bad and you make me wait because don't you know I'm trying to stay sober and I'm trying to live a life? Don't you understand that? And you're there with 13 goddamn items in this 10-item line, you silly old woman? I don't take into consideration I have a 3-year-old with me that is now terrified because it's all about me. I don't have any defects of character. I'm doing it because I know the store law and she's violating it. And the sheriff's come and my daughter is crying and hysterical. I don't look at that as hurting her. That's me without Alcoholics Anonymous and these 12 steps. That's me today. If you scratch the scab off of me, I will bleed on you. I am not a good human. I tell people I'm not a good man because I'm over 30 years sober. I'm not a good husband or a good father because I got time. Time doesn't make you a decent human being. Your actions in Alcoholics Anonymous and what you learn here and put into practice physically outside these rooms hopefully will make you a decent human being. But I'm not a good father, good husband, or good man because I'm over 30 years sober. I try to be a good member of AA because this program saves my sanity. Because this program allows me to live outside these rooms and I don't have to inflict myself on people most of the time. But I still, this is going to shock you. I still have lust and greed and sloth and jealousy. I still have all the things that they're in me. I hear people when I was new say, I'm a completely different person than when I come to AA. And I used to look at them and think, what'd you have, a sex change operation? What were you before? Are you an antelope? What the hell are you? I am the same person that came to Clancy's office 30 years ago. I am that person. Do not kid yourself. And if you scratch a scab off of me, I can be that person really quick. What I try to do is not let those things overwhelm me to where I take them outside these rooms or bring them in these rooms and act that way today. That I'm a better husband, father, and man today than I was 30 years ago. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better than I was today. But I can't guarantee that. Because I'm still a human being. And I don't use that as a cop-out. When I got sober and started coming to meetings, And I have to try. See, I watch you. I can read everything, and I can't be eloquent and have the understanding and knowledge that these other people have, and I'm serious about that. I have to watch how you act, and I have to try to act the way you act. And luckily, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it ain't the way it is today. Guys and women coming into AA half-dressed, tank tops, flip-flops, shorts, you know, being cool, a little hat cocked sideways and shit. That just screams, look at me, I'm precious. Am I cute or what? This damn thing. Don't talk to me about the steps. I'm too busy being dapper. But I'm glad I didn't get here then. I'm glad I got here when the old-timers didn't give a shit about your feelings. They cared about your sobriety and your life. And they didn't mince words. And Clancy wasn't the only one in that group that did that. Every male member in that group was the same as him. And you couldn't get away with anything. If you didn't dress right for a meeting, if you didn't have respect for AA, if you didn't treat your family right, if you didn't clean your language up and quit using the F word around the women, and you couldn't use it at the podium, they'd get on you. They didn't say, let me give you a hug. You're evidently having a bad day. They used to say, ever hear that shit coming out of your mouth again? Get out of the meeting. That's how they were. I had to be taught that way. As a result of what they have done for me by their example, because you can say anything to me you want to say, but I watch you, and I watch their example, and I tried to emulate what they were doing. And it held me in good stead. And I went to 7 meetings a week the first 3 years I was sober. And I had commitments to those meetings. I can't come in here and suck the life out of it and leave. I have to give something back. And I have to clean up or do the coffee pots or take the trash out. I have to do something in a meeting. I can't be a taker. I had learned that from my sponsor and the old timers in my group. And then I had to take it home with me. Because that's where I have a problem living. I have a problem living around kids that don't live up to my demands and expectations. And a wife that don't do it right, she should be doing it my way. And little by little over time, I learned how to be a husband. I learned it was a relationship, and I needed to treat her the way I wanted to be treated. I had to respect her the way I wanted her to respect me. I haven't done anything in sobriety to validate myself. Everything I've done, and I've done bad things. Most of the people know it. But I don't have to be validated. I did it because I wanted to do it. I had to learn how to be a father. I didn't know how to be a father. I thought I had to be the boss. I thought I had to be the drill instructor, like I was in the Marine Corps. No, I found out I had to respect my kids if I wanted them to respect me. I had to lower my voice in the house. I had to quit being that person. I had to become a father. I had to learn how to do that. I had to let them grow up, make their mistakes, make their decisions. As a result of that, I have a relationship with 3 out of my 4 children. I asked my kids when they got out of high school, I said, let me ask you something. My 2 daughters that were there and then my other daughter came out. And I said, did it ever bother you that I was always gone at meetings the first 3 years? I was at a meeting every night. I couldn't go to your school functions. I couldn't go when you were a cheerleader, Trace. I couldn't attend the school activities with you. Parent-teacher night, your mom had to go. Did it ever bother you or anything? And my daughters looked at me and said, no. Because when you went to AA meetings, when you came home, you were fun to be around. See, that's what you get here. If you let these defective characters and these shortcomings out of your life and let room, like Ralph said, for grace to come in. And I don't have a lot of grace. I'm going to tell you, they're in teaspoons. But my kids said, Dad, when you go to AA and you come home, you're fun to be around. That tells me something about Alcoholics Anonymous. Doesn't tell me anything about me. But it tells me something about this program if you put an effort into it and work at it. If you try to change, because if you think you can come in here and stay the same person you were, and acting that way, you will never stay.
I had to change my actions. I had to change how I treated people around me. I had to learn to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the human race. I learned it here by watching you. I learned it here by following your example. I'm a part of those kids' life. My daughter has twin grandbabies. They just turned a year, my granddaughters, and my grandson's three, and I got six other grandkids, and my oldest grandchild is 22-year-old, and they love their grandpa. They think I'm funny. You folks don't, but they do. And I'm going to tell you something. I really don't give a shit what you think. I care what my grandkids think. Because that's where the payoff is. I get to be around them. I get to be with them. I get to hug them. They get to hug me. They get to laugh and stuff. They think I'm funny. My youngest daughter, she's 34-year-old. She's LAPD. I worry about her. I had a scanner so I could hear her call. She said, if I ever see you show up at the scene where I'm working, Dad, I'll have you arrested for stalking. I told her partner, if my daughter ever gets hurt and I come to the hospital, you need to be hurt too, even if it's self-inflicted. They love me today. You can't feature it, but I can. My oldest daughter's an attorney for a medical corporation in Indiana for a hospital and has four of my grandkids, and I love them, and I talk to them all the time, and I have a good time with them because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you people have arrested my defects of character and shortcomings enough to allow me to be a dad and a human being. You've taught me how to act and how to speak and how to laugh at myself and do the things I'm supposed to do to be a human outside these rooms. My son, he's doing life in prison. He can't get this deal. He won't drop his defects of character or his shortcomings. He went to prison for 4 years, got out and wouldn't listen to a sponsor, wouldn't go to meetings, wouldn't drop his ego or his image. He wanted to come here like the young people still do today and be cool and slick and hit on the women. And he went back to prison for 5 years. And he did a whole five. He don't get good time when he goes. He is a bad dude. I love my son. It's the only son I have. And he got out and he come back and he wouldn't get a sponsor and he wouldn't go to meetings and he wouldn't drop his image. He wouldn't drop his character defects and his shortcomings, and he wanted to be a macho badass and have everybody be afraid of him and be slick and cool. And he went back to prison for 4 more years. That's 13. He got out and he got a girlfriend and he went to NA because he didn't think he was an alcoholic. And him and his girlfriend broke up and he went back out. And he got stopped by LAPD. And he had guns and a sawed-off shotgun and crack and heroin and baggies and scale and ski mask in his car. And that was his fourth strike, and he's doing life in prison. Because he won't change. He won't drop the suspect or the prospect of looking bad in front of other people. He wants to stay cool. He don't want to wear a coat and tie when he's supposed to wear it. He don't want to say please and thank you. He don't want to come in and shake hands with people. He wants to have the anger and the hate and the rage and everything that goes along with the defects of character and shortcomings, and he's picking a tab up for that. And if you will not change in these meetings, if you will not drop your little chinchy, immature attitude, you will not be here that long. Ask the people that have been around a while. If you go to your home group and your home group meets on a Monday night and the leader of the meeting says, can we see the hands of the people with 7 days or less sobriety? Depending on the size of the meeting, two or three or four, maybe five people will raise their hands as being in their first week or their first 30 days. I watched it at my Monday night meeting for 30 years now. And at the end of 52 weeks, the meeting has not gotten any bigger. If two or three people raise their hand every week, that's 156 people. The meeting should have grown by that much. But it has not grown by one person. Where do they go and why? Nobody will ever hold a gun to your head and make you drink or use. You will make that decision on your own, and it will be of your own free will.
You will give up this for that, so you can live and wallow in your defects of character and your shortcomings and be like me and be convinced you don't have any. It's them. And if you're sitting in this room right now and you're new or used and you're having a problem, there's nothing I've said that will change any of your thoughts. And I know that. I am very grateful for the life that I have today. I'm very grateful for the people I have in my life. I'm grateful that I have a wife sitting home that knows I'm going to be there tomorrow. I have a stepson that's 14 years old. I was coach of his football team in high school. He played. He's the only freshman that started on his football team. He started at defensive end, and I was helped with the defensive coach. And the second to last game of the season, we were behind 54-6 at halftime. I have no defects of character or shortcomings. And I walked into the locker room and I said, let me tell you little assholes something. If they score 1 point in this second half, I will waterboard every one of you. They held them scoreless in the second half. Sometimes fear will motivate you. I hope that fear motivates you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the fear of what's in here, but the fear of what's out there. Because that's where we return to. And like it was said by a couple of the speakers already, going out there and dying ain't a big deal. Going out there living on the streets and staying alive, that's a big deal. But if you're new or used, I think the only thing you should remember is when you pick up chapter 5 in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you look at it, that very first line to me says it all. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks.